Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining us today. This is Dr. Susie Harris, and you're listening to the Next 7 podcast. This is a podcast that highlights the intention for all beings to have access to clean organic food, clean water, and access to functional health care. This vision really is meant to leave behind us a world for the next 7 generations that would allow them to thrive. So clean food, clean water, functional health care seems like a nice base to give people a place to stand. So I am super excited today because I have a great friend and colleague on with me today, Dave Clark of Divine Roots. And Dave, he's a clairvoyant reader, also a healer and a teacher. He helps a lot of people become more aware of themselves as spirit. And I'll let him talk more about that because it's quite amazing the work that he does. And I want to say, Dave, one of the favorite lines I read on your website was giving people a deeper understanding. It creates space to let go of limiting beliefs and patterns so that you can create a new way of relating to your life that's in alignment with who you are. So how are you doing, by the way?
Oh, very good. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm honored.
Yeah, I am super glad to have you here. Just a little note as well. You know, I usually go sleuth around about your background so I can share it with people. You have a master's degree in early childhood special education from the University of Vermont, and you completed a clairvoyant training program at the Intuitive Awareness Center. That's here in Georgia, Vermont, co-founded by Gwyneth Flack and Gail Myers. And then also, there's a couple more programs you completed, but even equally as amazing, and probably, I just love Michael Tamora. So the fact that you joined Michael and Raphael Tamora's Sears Healers Apprenticeship Practicum experience. So you've completed a lot of their trainings. So I'm going to back out of listing all the things that you've done. And just kind of get into letting people hear more about your heart and how'd you get into this and that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
What did inspire you to get into this?
Yeah, well, my daughter mainly, who she was born severely disabled and wasn't able to walk or talk her whole life. And so I'm literally a trained clairvoyant. I didn't grow up with this kind of, or I wasn't aware. When I look back, there's like signs, you know, but sure. I wasn't aware of it at the time. And I was a basketball player and all that kind of stuff and into sports and everything else. And when my daughter was born severely disabled, that was the impetus to kind of get me back on track. And I really let go of some of the behaviors that I had kept carrying on throughout college. And then eventually, because my daughter couldn't walk or talk, I came across someone in a kindergarten program. Her name is Naomi Matsuda. And she's like, oh, you really got to see Michael tomorrow. You got to come down and take a look at he has a talk he's going to have. And so I went and did the talk, but I didn't do the weekend. And then the next year, she said, you got to meet Gwyneth and Gail Myers. They're going to be doing a clairvoyant training program. And I thought to myself, man, Gail Myers, who was an MD in internal medicine, I was thinking, boy, if she went through all that medical school training and believes there's validity enough to this that she's teaching it, I was like, I got to give it a try. You know, maybe it'll help me communicate with Ella better. And, at that time, I had all these fantastical ideas. But so I told myself, I'm like, all right, I'll just do everything they say for 1 year, you know. And at the end of that year, if I think it's all a bunch of hogwash, then I'll stop and I'll find something else. But I haven't gone back since. And what I realized is that I was already communicating very profoundly with Ella on the nonverbal spiritual levels. And it just helped me recognize and become more aware of that. And then over a long period of time, completely like deprogramming and taking away the dross that's covering your ability to see and access your intuition, then I started seeing more and more and more. So for the first 6 months, I didn't see anything but black.
Started your training with those guys, you mean?
Yeah, when I started my training, I didn't see anything but black. And then one day I saw a little movie and I was like, whoa, you know, it's like amazed. And then from that point on, I haven't looked back, and I've been studying it for over 12 years now. And one of the greatest gifts that program gave to me was helped me to see more of the truth of when my daughter died, more of what really was going on, and be able to access that connection with her in spirit. And when I was holding her in my arms when she died, I completely was transported with her into spirit and had this experience of total oneness and just an amazing experience of her being greeted by these beautiful light beings. And
holy, profound. Like
the closest I've ever experienced God for sure. Mm. And that, and afterwards, when I came back, of course, then I had to deal with all the loss of identity and the loss of myself as a dad, and our kind of our voice was kind of a communal one in the community. And then I had to, you know, keep using the clairvoyant development and trainings to help me transmute the grief and to convert it into wisdom so I could see more clearly. And then what I realized was, oh, the relationships never really end.
The Isn't body that a beautiful does, thing?
But the relationship and spirit can go continue on. And so now I can have a conversation with her anytime I want. And there's no, you know, there's still things that pop up around certain days, like her angel date or her birthday. You know, there's still some grief that's deep in there somewhere that all of a sudden will come up. But for the most part, I can have conversations with her whenever I want. And I never would have been able to get to that space without having had that experience with her being born severely disabled and then her passing. She was 11. So
isn't it amazing how it's almost, well, you and I've talked about this as friends before, I think. Just the things that are in our life that are almost like social, they're almost like spiritual contracts, I guess, right?
Absolutely.
How we come through and are with each other. I have a couple questions for you about what you were just saying. In the first thing that you said about how you knew you were already communicating with your daughter prior to your trainings, can you tell me a little bit about what you meant by that?
Yeah, I think at some level, most parents would agree that they kind of know what their kids want. Mm-hmm. You know, you just kind of know through, it's hard to describe. I just always felt like I knew what Ella wanted, and what my struggle with her was is developing a way that she could communicate to those who didn't know her what she wanted, you know? And what I realized through the trainings is I was able to access more and more of the communication so that we started creating art together. And things like that based off of instead of doing yes and no, which is the way we used to it, I would just listen to her tell me. And then I would create it for her because she couldn't move, you know? So that part, and I remember very early on in Ella's life, when she would cry, I felt like my chest was just going to explode, you know? So heart to heart already, I knew like, This I didn't realize. I just thought, oh my God, if I don't get her to stop crying at the time, I'm going to like implode with like anxiety because it was just so intense back then when she was an infant. But I realized later on that was just heart to heart communication. And I knew I needed to do something, right? I knew I needed to respond. I knew I needed to help her in whatever way at that time. So it's just, I don't know. There's things like I don't know if it's innate in all parents, but with both my wife and myself, it's kind of like we just knew, you know.
I think parents would hear what you're talking about. I think even just not you can you certainly wouldn't compare the two, but I think also people would say that about pets and stuff. Like
they absolutely
you super pick that up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so when you talked about when you first started your clairvoyant trainings, first all you saw was black, and then you got a movie. Is that like in a state of meditation that you get into first and then you can kind of have those experiences?
Yep. And that kind of goes into when I teach my own classes in the beginning, the way that I was taught is it's all meditation. We do the meditation sitting in a chair with our feet flat on the ground. So it's a little different than some of the yoga meditations where you're sitting cross-legged and things like that. This is active meditation where you're actively running earth and cosmic energies and you're getting yourself grounded and in the center of your head. And from the center of the head, centering your awareness in the sixth chakra, then you look out there onto a screen and you see. But in the beginning, there's so much programming that's telling you it's not real, that what you see, what you're just imagining it. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's a lot of fear too around like what you might see. Or can you trust what you see? And, you know, especially when you're starting to like communicate to somebody what you're looking at in the beginning, it's utterly terrifying. Mm-hmm. And that fear will light up and then you'll see nothing but black, because most of the time fear looks like black. It's just compressed energy that's just dense. And so you're not seeing anything because you're just so scared. But it's in with the eyes closed. You can do it all with your eyes open. But in the beginning, it's as if you have to learn the tools, or from my perspective, the way I was taught, I had to learn how to still my mind enough in order to access the intuitive part, because intuition is subtle. It's not going to beat you over the head with a hammer. I mean, it might sometimes if you need to get, you know, if you're about to walk across a train track and you hit by a train, you know, spirit might knock you upside the head so you don't go that way. But most of the time, all that intuition is super subtle. And if your internal, I call it mind chatter, one of these teachers called it the monkey mind. But if that's going, you won't hear the intuition because your internal state's too distorted and you can't access that calm, centered aspect of you as spirit that's still and infinite and immortal. And so
always those, there.
Yeah, it's always there. It's just, can you, the world is a really, you know, a place that creates a lot of distraction. Well, our minds tend to get pulled towards the five senses instead of our intuitive awareness. So those tools are, I find, very imperative. And I teach them in a class called Maintain Peace Using Your Intuition Level 1 and Level 2. And
it really just helps.
Those classes that I teach are the beginning level ones. And it's Maintain Peace Using Your Intuition Level 1. And I teach them called Level 2. And it's basically the way I was taught, the tools to help manage the energies of every day. All the energies that when we're in the world that can get us pulled in those directions, these tools help to settle all that down so we can be still enough to access our intuition in the world is the ideal scenario in all scenarios. But in the beginning, we do it in meditation because it's easier, it's more controlled. Sure. And then as you develop your mastery, you can take that into the world and have it in the world. And then you know you've really anchored that level of awareness in when you can do it in the world.
Awesome. And is that kind of what you meant when you said, you know, you have to help people pull away the programming to get down into this space that we all have, this intuitive connected space, pulling away the programming, like that's not real, that's imaginary.
Yeah, absolutely. Because a clairvoyant reading wouldn't work if we were truly separate. Right? If we were really separate, I would not be able to look clairvoyantly at you. But because we're not in spirit, we're whole, then I can see within you because we're the same. It's like, it's the namaste. The light in you is also the light in me. So that's why that works. And by looking at somebody else, I also, it can reflect a little bit about where I might still be limited. So I get to know myself. And by looking at that programming or how everyone's context of the way they, quote, got programmed can be different. But once it's their energy in it, making it real to them. Once you communicate spirit to spirit to that part of them that believes that, it starts to come out. And then that program just fades away. And then that energy that was theirs comes back to them and they return more to wholeness. They get their energy back to create a new way to respond in that area of their life, whether it's a relationship or if it's a health problem or whatever. Once you find, once you see the energies that they're stuck in and they start to come out, then they have the freed up energy as the healing at, that was heretofore limited by being inside that picture programming limit that 99% of the time is unconscious to them. It's a conscious mind just running along, and the clairvoyant looking at it brings it to consciousness, and then they can let it go.
So let me see if I caught what you just said. So if I'm having, let's say, a struggle in my life somewhere, and I sit with you, and you're able to clairvoyantly soul, spirit to spirit connect, and through your skills that you've developed, catch where I might have a programming that's in my way for being able to have a more expanded understanding of things. And so you might help me see the energy inside that programming, and by just acknowledging that it's there, it kind of starts to loosen up and get out of my way.
Yeah, because the light of awareness, darkness can't stay. It's just like, you know, when you turn on the light doesn't fight the darkness just goes away because it wasn't there in the first place.
That's so a great point.
The light of my, like the part of me that can see that, the light of that awareness hits the light of your awareness that's stuck, and then the darkness just fades away. Your awareness, you come out, because the non-truth can't exist in the presence of truth or awareness or light. So darkness can't be there. And so that's another way to kind of describe how it works. And I'll give you an example of someone, a client I had recently.
Cool.
We were looking at his relationship with he had a fiance and then they broke up, and we were looking at that dynamic. And one of the things I saw in his heart chakra was he had a pain picture from his stepfather, where his stepfather was very abusive to him. So physically abusive. Then on the other side, he had an abandonment picture related to his real father not being present. So he was in a lot of pain from those two dynamics, the physical abuse and the child, him being terrified and in pain. And then the other side, the child is lacking worth because he's been abandoned by his biological dad. So those are him as a child, birth to six, somewhere in that range, in a lot of fear and a lot of pain. It's in the heart chakra, pushed way back. In front of it was this hard yellow that when he was a kid, he would have to listen to his mother and stepfather argue and yell at each other and get in these big fights. And he's in the other room listening to it all, obviously resisting it because it doesn't sound good. And he even said, he would tell his family, like, I can hear you, I'm in the other room, you know, as a kid. So he felt helpless, like he couldn't do anything, but he was resisting it. So that argument energy in the yellow got in it as a protection to the pain. So when his fiance, if this fiance was just having a bad day, the child him, he thought he was the cause of his parents getting in an argument, would get lit up within him. And he would think that the bad day his fiance was having was his fault, and try and get all worked up. And then he would slide forward into the yellow and start arguing, because that's the energy he took on from his parents. And he basically created the scenario again of him and his mom and his stepfather arguing. Now he's arguing with his fiance and pushing him or pushing her away because he's trying to protect himself from the pain of the child that was abused, basically.
Wow.
So he acts it out. So then the key is helping him release the pain. So communicating to him about why he was afraid and him becoming aware, oh, that's past time, right? That's something that I did experience back then, but I don't need to carry it forward to where I am now. And then he lets that go. And then some of the protection fades away. He gets some colors back that are his, like his bright colors, that now he can relate to his fiance differently from, instead of falling into this old pattern of protecting his pain with anger. And that same mechanism wouldn't show up in his work life, because in his work life, no one's lighting up that pain. It only happened in his personal life.
Interesting, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And I can imagine, just from what I know from my own work, any sort of packed away pain, packed away grief, anything that hasn't been able to get some air or light, even if it's subconscious, can start to manifest in your body as a physical health problem.
Absolutely. I completely agree. As a matter of fact, I think all of that is what leads to the physical ailments.
Doesn't it make sense? Because the body knows how to just be humming along without pain and all the disease and that sort of thing. But blocked energy can be a thing.
Oh, it really can. And then it trickles down. And the body is like a servant to you as a soul. It just matches where you are. And if you're holding pain, then the body over time will express. It doesn't show up in the beginning, but if we keep making like repetitive decisions based off of unconscious programming over time, it then when we're 40 or 45, all of a sudden we're having all these problems, you know?
But yes. Anyway. And did they sort of work it out?
I don't know. I'm not
it's
sure.
It's in process.
You don't lots get of times I never hear what happens after the reading. So
that's
I don't
right.
know.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, I just have to trust that that spirit's going to align it all for the better of both of them, you know?
Mm-hmm. And so tell me a little bit about why would a person, and I think I know this and you know this, but sometimes I forget. People who might not be familiar with this kind of work wouldn't think about this. What would the value be for someone? I mean, obviously what you just described would be like, if someone took that and worked it through, it would improve their relationships. But What would be the value of sitting with you and having you do a reading or some sort of healing type stuff together?
I think the main value is being validated as spirit. Mm. And in any session, you're going to experience that, because I'm not looking at you as a physical being, which most of our lives, we grow up being seen as a body. Hey, Dave. You know, they're not saying Dave, me as a spirit most of the time. They're looking mm-hmm. Dave, the body. That's Dave, right? Mm-hmm. And so that is like almost an unconscious invalidation over and over and over, because they're not saying hi to who we really are. That's way bigger than the body. And that animates it, right? And brings the power in to animate the body. So most of the time, in almost all the readings, people leave feeling more like themselves, meaning that they seem a little more joyous, a little more bright. And energetically, I can see they've lightened up. Literally, they lighten up. And whenever you are feeling your own energy, you're going to feel good. And that validation, spirit to spirit, almost everyone's going to feel some sense of that, because I'm validating them as who they really are versus the ego part of them that's believed them to be this thing. And so they will usually get happier, feel lighter, you know, especially in the very first one, very first reading, almost always that happens. So that's that's the really the main value, is to be seen for who you really are, from a place of neutrality, compassion, and amusement. And they just lighten up. So I don't know.
Doesn't that make sense? Geez, even just you talking about it, like being validated. I mean, putting it in a really simple terms, if you're in a disagreement with someone and they say to you, you know what, I can see your point. You could be right about that. Even just that is like you settle. And on the level that you're talking about, like trying to get more in alignment and more in relationship with that bigger picture of yourself. Mm-hmm. Like I can imagine once you achieve something like that, you will have made your way through all of the judgments you have about yourself, fear you have people are judging you, all the crap that just kind of keeps us in a space of anxiety and not feeling whole, not feeling loved. I can imagine if you find a way to validate your larger, more heart self, spirit self, how that could bring some peace.
Oh, it brings tremendous peace to them, because they're a part of them that's not divided. Mm-hmm. Right? They're like, part of the reading is helping them align with their true north, their higher self, the God of their own heart, whatever you want to call that. And operating from that space, that's the part of us that's whole. And the part down here is the divided part that's in the ego and has desires and wants, and it creates all this kind of distortion. So that spirit to spirit hello is saying hello to the undivided part of them.
Then
they'll experience it down here, as they'll experience less division, they'll experience more of themselves, helps them, you know, have a experience of more wholeness within them. So, an amazing thing. I never would have thought, if you asked me 20 years ago, I'd be doing something like this. There's just never in a million years. My life is to say, here, you're going to do this. Here, you're going to do that. It's just like, and I'm like, when I look back, like, I really didn't have a choice. I just was like, okay.
And it started off with you, that some of your friends were like, hey, you got to meet Gwyneth and you got to meet Gail. And you bumped into this. Woman,
in the kindergarten, I was taking my daughter to school in Burlington Public School, Champlain Elementary, as her paraeducator. Now, before my daughter was born, I'd worked with kids with autism. So I'd been in special ed for a while already. And I somehow was able to navigate it where I could take her to school as her paraeducator and father, which is usually, that's unusual. They usually don't let you do that. And I ran into this woman who knew Michael. She was an aide in the kindergarten classroom. And we were doing the Course in Miracles at the same time. So we had a lot to talk about around the Course in Miracles. She was doing it, I was doing it. And then all this other stuff started coming out about it. And then that's how I got on. And I met Gail Myers at that retreat down in Burlington. And everything from that point on has been going. It hasn't been easy. Spiritual growth has not been easy by any stretch of the imagination. But it's been definitely worth it. I could not imagine being anywhere else, even through all the challenges that I've had to experience to get here. But
I would imagine when you're digging into that, that training, you're going to bump into your own healing. So you're going to hit some of your stuff.
Oh, you're going to hit all the BS, all the pain. And, I mean, it's amazing. Cause that's the whole process of the deprogramming that allows you to open up, to be able to see. Like if you have a lot of unconscious pain, you're not going to be able to see, because that part of you is going to be stuck down, like in the second chakra feeling things, or in the first chakra fear of survival, or third chakra control dynamics, you know. And the part of the training helps you get more of your energy and awareness into the sixth chakra at the behind the forehead. Mm-hmm. And then that's where the seat of your clairvoyance, your ability, and that just means seeing clearly. That's all it really means. It's just seeing the truth from the lie. You know, the expression when people say, "Oh, I see what you're saying," you know, that's clairvoyance. They see the deeper understanding about what someone's saying. It's not the superficial words. It's like a deeper understanding, an abstract intuition or a pragmatic intuition type level. It's the same with the fifth chakra. When people say, "Oh, I hear what you're saying," right? It goes beyond just the words. It's like they get the real meaning. They really get the meaning. And that's a discriminatory function of the fifth chakra. So it's like you have to have enough energy up there and not down at the fear survival levels in order to access it. So a lot of the training, it's clearing out all those fears, all that programming, all those limits, all the trauma and pain. And so as you're clearing that, lots of times we can become it and it can be really uncomfortable until you get through to the other side. And I think Jesus said something along the lines of, you know, seek and you'll find, and what you find, you'll be disturbed and then amazed. And so that's spiritual growth in a nutshell. You go looking and you find, and what you find is like, you know, then you get through that. And then the increase in expansion of your awareness, you're like, whoa,
so freed up.
Unbelievable. Yeah. But if you stopped at hitting that part, that's like, then if you resist it and you don't have the tools to get through it or have someone help you get through it, it goes back down and then it keeps popping up periodically. And it'll affect you throughout your life and then eventually lead to physical problems.
Yeah. And half the time you're reacting to something that's not even really happening in real time.
That's right. It's totally.
You're triggering some old thing you've pushed back.
That's right. Those are the pictures. Pictures are always in past time.
And when you say pictures, do you mean like memories?
Yeah, memories. Yeah. They're little packets of energy that we put a judgment on. Mm-hmm. And like we have an experience as a kid and we go, that hurt. So the experience, if we could have just been neutral to it and let it be the experience, it just flowed away. But because we go, chomp, the judgment goes right on it. And then that gets filed away in the subconscious mind into another experience outside of us, energetically or frequency vibrates the same. And then that chomp slides right up. And now we're just acting out that fear. And we wonder why we can't speak in public, or we wonder why we keep trying to make a change, but we get two steps forward and then we're four steps back and two steps forward. You know, it's like we have to create the space and let go of those things that slide up that heretofore have been limiting us. Mm-hmm. And so, you know how to like de-energize that, then it won't limit you. Just, oh, that's just a limit from when I was two. Oh, well, I'm going to keep going forward. And then you just keep creating, you know.
I'm curious, the people that seek your help, there's probably all kinds of reasons people come to see you, but do you have a typical, like, is it people who are just frustrated? They can't break a pattern, or how do people end up coming to see you?
Yeah. Well, most of it's all been through word of mouth. And in the beginning, I used to get, when I first started giving readings paid, like professionally, I was getting a lot of relationship type of questions, people coming with relationships that weren't working. And that's a mirror, because then it's looking, I have to look within myself and my relationships, because then let go. So it's win-win. I get to heal as I'm looking at their relationship, helping them heal. But now it's much more eclectic. People come for all kinds of reasons. And whether it's personal relationships, that, you know, relationships, career, and health tend to be the three most popular reasons.
But relationships, career, and health. That makes sense.
Yeah, tend to be the most. And then from that space, it opens up a lot of other doors within their mind about creative manifestation and how can I live the life of my dreams? And how can I manifest a relationship that's right for me, that's going to help me fulfill my purpose moving forward, instead of just like trying to get a relationship, or why isn't this relationship working? See, sometimes we get stuck trying to solve a problem and we forget that we have to create the solution. Right. So by helping them recognize the underlying cause of the problem, then their energy comes out. That creative power now can be used to create a new way going forward, instead of falling into the same old pattern. So if people come back for more readings, it tends to go way more deeper into helping them fulfill their soul's purpose and spiritual path. But in the beginning, we have to get through certain things in order to get to that space. Mm-hmm. And so it can be lots of different things.
Makes sense.
And people come from all around, you know, it's just like, sometimes people come, they want to know why something happened to them. Mm. Like one woman, who barely ever drinks, had two glasses of wine at a thing and ended up getting an accident, and couldn't understand the context of why would she create that in her life as an experience to learn. You know, if I looked at my life with my daughter and was like, why did I create this experience that for her to be severely disabled, you know, and then die when she's 11, like you could just, you'll run your mind into the ground. You'll just be depressed. But if you step back and see the context of the spiritual learning, it's been all geared towards me. For me, it's been helping me become more aligned with spirit and nonverbal communication and the power of spirit that leads to the physical manifestation of things. And for my daughter, you know, she was learning too, because she was really powerful in her life and her influence on people, and she couldn't talk or walk. She had to be wheeled around and carried everywhere. But everyone, I bet you, everyone who ever met her remembers her.
you know? And the main thing that comes up is love, love, love. Ella was all about love.
All about the love. And you couldn't go into competition with Ella, right? Because she couldn't compete with anything. So the only thing you could do was play with her, share your life with her, be with her. You couldn't try to be the best with her, because what were you going to be the best at? She couldn't do anything on the physical, right? So immediately, she was teaching people how to change their paradigms in their mind to fit someone like Ella into it. You know, you couldn't compete with Ella. You had to let go of all that. And then love can come forward. Because naturally, a spirit, we are loving beings, but our egos, you know, can get in the way of all that, in the way of us experiencing it, you know. So,
boy, we sure need more of that right now, don't we? We've had such an interesting few years where everybody's fear and trying to protect themselves and all of that stuff. Your angle makes a lot of sense for coming back to the heart, coming back to who we are as spirit and humans who truly, really kind of, I think we feel best when we're back in our seat of love and taking care of each other. But it's hard to do when you get all these other, you know, facets that kind of put you in the defense mode, put you in the survival of the fittest, and living up to some image.
More.
I know. I remember someone telling me a story once of, I think it was an indigenous practice where, I'm probably going to get this wrong a bit, but it was something about when the baby was born, they really didn't let a lot of people around the baby, and they took care of the baby super deeply. And for the first number of days, the baby was in darkness and just surrounded by love. I think the idea was to not begin, try to remember not to impose on a new arrival spirit being all of the thoughts and thinking and should be and shouldn't be, and oh, look, he's this or she's that. And it's like, no, don't even say it. Yeah. Give this spirit a chance to arrive and arrive before
magnetizing all that stuff and pulling it in. I think they're onto something there.
Yeah, right.
I really do, because lots of times when the soul comes through the transmediumship space of the female as they're going to enter into the body, they'll pick up all the energy from if they resist anything within mom as they come through there, and then they carry it right into their incarnation, partly because that might be what they're looking to learn and work on throughout their life. But other stuff can just be in the way. And that, then if you have it that early on, you're just going to think it's you, not even recognize that you picked it up from mom through the incarnation process.
Right. So
it's like, it's pretty amazing. And that when you were talking about that, I was seeing, wow, they're limiting, they're able to manage the energy of that in a way to minimize how much that soul just absorbs just through, because we're like electromagnets.
Yeah. You know? Right away.
Especially as a young kid, I mean, as a baby with all, where the whole being come in his little body, you know, it's like, we're not even in yet. It's
right. Kind of, but so let me ask you this. If someone were to come see you, what does a session look like? How does it work interfacing with you?
Yeah, well, I do them all over the phone. So I do it through a phone conference that if the person wants it recorded, I can do that. And I have some international clients where I will do Zoom, but even with Zoom, I do that so they don't have to pay extra for the phone call. But even with Zoom, I will turn the video off, because when I'm giving a reading, I do it with my eyes closed and I'm in a meditative space. So I figure people don't want to stare at me with my eyes closed. So we turn that off. And then, you know, I'll have them say their name a couple of times for me to tune into their energy. I'll describe a little bit about that. And then I'll ask them, you know, what would you like me to look at for you today for them? And so that's where they can have, you know, most of the time goes by really quickly. So in an hour session, I'll be able to probably answer two questions in depth to help clear the energies around it. Sometimes three. An hour and a half session, we could probably get to three pretty easily. Then they have to have that first reading, and they can either do a 60-minute session or a 90-minute session. And then I only do once a month, maximum frequency. It's not a hard and fast rule, but it does these kinds of readings. It takes about a month to integrate everything and to live in the new energy and to experience that new power that they get back. Mm-hmm. So I found that if I do too many back to back, that growth can get a little discomfort. It can be uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So a month is usually a good space. And some of my colleagues will require 2 to 3 months even to integrate between readings. Mm-hmm. So if some people who want to do that, then that's great. And other people who just want once and that's it, that's great too. And it just depends on their preference, you know, of how the frequency they like. Because the real benefit of a reading is hopefully to empower that person to have clarity and certainty to make the decisions to take their next step, not for me to tell them what to do. So I won't tell people what to do. And I try my best not to offer advice and predict things. Because although I can do that, if you tell someone that something's going to happen in 6 months, they're going to wait around for that thing to happen in 6 months. Mm-hmm. They might miss all the miracles that happen between now and that 6 months because they're waiting for something. So it tends to program people if you tell them those things. So I do my best not to do that and just read the energy and what has been limiting them within them to help heal it so that then they can get their creative energy back and respond from their power, not to rely on me to be giving them the answers, but that they have the answers within themselves. And my teacher, Michael Tamora, wrote a whole book called You Are the Answer. So that's the real power in it. And over time, most often than not, after a certain point, you don't need readings anymore because you start learning how to do that stuff yourself. And then maybe periodically, you might need someone to take a look at something because you just got really stuck, and some things can be really hard for us to look at within ourselves, and we might need someone to put an eye on it. But over time, the hope is, from my perspective, is it empowers them to enough to be able to do all the stuff themselves and live in this world, bring heaven to earth, their light here, and shine it themselves. So
I love how that sounds. That's amazing. I'm so glad you're on the planet.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you're here too.
It's Eastern today. Oh, well, you know, I think the only other thing, unless you have other things, did you have anything else you wanted to have people know about you?
Well, this has been great. I think it's covered everything that I'd like to share. Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll definitely have a link to your website and contact information from you in the notes that come with the podcast when it goes out. People can find it out there. I do like to ask this one question. It's a little bit overdone maybe, but I just love this question. If you were able to talk to your 20-something self, what kind of feedback would you give yourself? What kind of advice?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Well, if I, from present time, talking to my 20-year-old self, who was pretty wild.
Yeah.
I'd say you can relax, dude.
Yes.
And most people thought of me at that age, I think, as a free spirit. But when I look back, I was running from pain. Mm-hmm. And I was calming myself, like either through heavy exercise, trying to make myself better in basketball, or drinking, mm-hmm. getting out of the body. So I was running from pain, and I wasn't really aware of that. That's what I was doing. Mm. So I would just let myself know, hey, you're good enough, dude. You are enough, brother.
Beautiful, and, beautiful message.
You're enough, man. You don't need to like kill yourself to try and make yourself more. And that's what self-realization, what I've come to discover, really is, right? It's mm-hmm. not making yourself better. It's discovering who you've already always been.
Mm.
Without the divisions in your mind.
So powerful.
Why do you just got to let go of the divisions? You discover, oh, I've been whole the whole time. Holy moly, I've been had by the ego, you know? It's just amazing. Oh. So yeah, that 20-year-old self, I just say, man, you're enough, brother. You're good.
Yeah. What a beautiful message.
Yeah.
But I really like, I feel my heart open when you say that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, friend, for making time to do this today. I appreciate all that you bring.
And my pleasure.
Yeah, we'll definitely make sure people figure out how to find you. And thank you for listening, whoever is taking in this podcast. Again, this is Next 7. I'm Dr. Susie Harris, and I am super committed to continuing to raise the awareness of a thriving life. I believe it's pretty helpful if everyone has access to clean organic food, clean filtered water, and access to functional healthcare. And like we've been talking with Dave today, many different angles to come from for finding your way to your most balanced self. I think when people are healthy and feeling well, they're a little more able to look around and notice who's around them and who else might need some love and some help. And then we start behaving on the planet in a way that's thriving. And we leave that behind for our next 7 generations so they can be experiencing that same thing. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
All right.